Move into item number two, which is always a pleasure for us to listen to the issues and the concerns of the folks around the state. It is very educational and very beneficial to us. So I appreciate all of you that have come today to testify. The rules of engagement here, I think, are familiar to most of you. With the exception of the senator and the representative, public comment is 3 minutes. You will hear a beeper go off. That means your time is up. You can finish your comments within the next 5 or 10 seconds, but after 10 seconds or so, we'll have to cut you off because we want everybody to have an opportunity to speak. So we have 11 individuals. I will call you up two at a time so we can keep the rotation going. And I would like to, and I apologize in advance if I mispronounce some names. With a last name like Smith, if you all had that, I'd get it all right all the time. So Ted Wishon and Brian Danzel, Senator Brian Danzel. Come up, please.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
As a member of a livestock organization, I would like to defer my spot until our president has spoken. If I could slide back behind the
sure.
president's talk, I would appreciate that.
Sure, just let me know when that comes up.
Okay. Monty McPeak will speak, and I'd like to follow him if I could, please.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
So then, Mr. McPeak, you come up, please, and then you can kick it off, Senator. And courtesy provided to elected officials is that we do not impose the 3-minute rule. It's two. No. So you are open. The floor is yours, Senator.
All right. Can you hear me? I don't know how this works if I'm being recorded here.
You might just pull it up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, politicians have a kind of a tendency to talk too much, so I don't blame you for the 2-minute rule.
Just joking.
Yeah. But thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Director, members, for the opportunity to speak here before you today. I think today what I'd like to speak about a little bit is just the growing angst with the Wolf Advisory Group. And a lot of my constituents, as evidenced probably by the news that you've already heard about the cattle producers of Washington wishing to withdraw from the Wolf Advisory Group. And this is a very divided subject. I'm not really certain that everybody in my district or even everybody in ranching in general is going to agree with everything that I have to say. And I think that's a sign of how failed the Wolf Advisory Group is. One of the things that I've always tried to make sure that, and I think the legislature's always looked at it and the people have demanded it, and I don't think it really matters on what side of the aisle you are on or what position you have when it comes to wolves in general, but one of the things that's supremely disappointing to a lot of people is there was a lot of money recently invested in the Wolf Advisory Group and conflict resolution. $850,000, which doesn't sound like a bunch in the whole scheme of things, but that's quite a bit of money. And I know that maybe you don't feel it. I think you probably do, but I know I was a former county commissioner, now I'm a senator, and one of the things that people talk about is shedding light on what takes place. In fact, there's whole committees that are made up called Sunshine Committees to shine light on what's taking place, what's being discussed. And I have a real concern that these meetings are being closed. We've had two of them now that have been closed. And I guess I just wonder if it's not good enough to say in public, should they be talking about it? I don't believe they ought to be. I don't think that that's really the way that you're supposed to hold meetings. I've never been able to hold a meeting like that. As a matter of fact, there are two counties in the northeast part of the state of Washington that have advised county commissioners not to go to those meetings because they're closed and they call it an illegal meeting. So you have a significant investment by the state of Washington in this group, and the public isn't allowed to see what's being talked about. It baffles me. In the state legislature and in especially a county commission setting, you'd be run out of office by your constituents if that took place. There are times for executive sessions. You probably know the laws about that, and there are times for serial lawsuits and everything else that might take place that you would have to speak to legal counsel that you wouldn't necessarily want on the public record. But when you're talking about such a polarizing issue, I don't have any idea why those meetings ever get closed. So I'm here to speak in behalf of myself and an overwhelming number of constituents that I think do agree with the cattle producers of Washington. You might hear testimony that later on contradicts that. I don't believe that that changes my opinion. I don't believe it changes the overwhelming opinion of those in the 7th Legislative District that I represent, that they are supremely unhappy with no sunlight, no transparency. We haven't really seen any resolution to the wolf problems. As a matter of fact, I think you could say that if you were on the rancher's side of the issue, it's gone backwards. When the Diamond M Ranch had depredations several years ago, there was kind of swift action, at least in these circles, that were taken to be able to circumvent any kind of problems that and depredations that took place. The most recent catastrophe with Mr. DeShiel, it took a lot longer time, and I think that there was nothing really done. There was one wolf that was taken. And so I see the commentary that comes out of these meetings, and I just have to say it's not going to work with all non-lethal options. There have got to be lethal options, and I don't know why we don't stick to the wolf plan that was adopted, where it was called out exactly what had to happen, and then it doesn't seem like that ever takes place on the ground. And I implore you that these people are making a living off of this. This is not, and it was brought to me earlier that there's two kind of stakeholders, I guess, in this. There's emotional stakeholders, and then there's people that actually make their living at this. There are financials. So when you have losses of hundreds of animals or even just a few animals, I don't know if you know what the price of beef is right now, but it's several thousand dollars, and in some cases several hundred thousand dollars. And I don't believe that there is a fair makeup on that board. This is a good example. I don't know if, I'm sure you probably know of this, but the Four County area, Ferry, Ponderay, Stevens, and Okanagan, they were allowed to have one county commissioner represent all those counties. And now I understand that there's even an attempt to single out ranchers and split and divide the ranching community up and go after individual ranchers. If that's the case, then I think that we should probably have every single rancher in the state of Washington represented on that WAG. But just to divide and kind of conquer and say that one rancher is more important than the other, and so they get to sit on a WAG group and then have closed meetings, if that's the case, then this is a predetermined outcome, and I don't even know what we're talking about. So I implore the commission to do what you can in that regard, and I think that the WAG has some serious questions about the integrity of what's going on in those meetings. And I think that if there's public dollars that are being expended, I think they ought to be open. I think they ought to be public. I think the makeup of the board ought to be fair and balanced. I don't believe it is fair and balanced. I believe that we need more representation from local government. That's only fair. I think we need, if we are really going to be a free for all on who gets to sit on the, so if every affected rancher has a seat, then I think every rancher ought to have a seat at the table. And so I thank you for your time today. I don't know if you have any questions or comments for me, but I'd be more than willing to answer them at this time. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, thank you for your comments. I just want to acknowledge one point from my perspective sitting on this commission. I didn't know about the $850,000 expenditure until I read it on Newslinks out of the Olympia. I was a little bit taken back by that. I'm not sure how that process could have or should have been done differently, but made me feel kind of like I live in a small town anyway, but I didn't know it was quite that small. What three or four You brought up a lot of points. What three or four really significant suggestions would you focus in on for us to consider?
I would, first of all, I would open membership in the WAG to an elected official from each county that's being affected. So I think that every county in the state, basically, that has wolves in their county. And we've got that information, should be able to, and where there are depredations taking place, should be able to sit on that board. I think if you're, see, the WAG has now made a distinction that you don't actually have to belong to a group. You can just be an individual. And once you open that door, I think you got to be fair. I don't know how you can be prejudiced against every rancher. So if you're going to allow individuals to sit on the WAG group, then I think if 14 different individual ranchers want to be on the WAG, there better be a pretty good reason why they aren't allowed, but others are. And so to me, I think you got to be equitable in that. And then finally, the third point would be they have to be open meetings. And I don't really know how there's a loophole right now that allows them not to do that, but I can tell you I will initiate legislation that does not, I mean, that will get to the heart of that. I can't see really too many people disagreeing, regardless of what side you're on, that there should be closed meetings when public dollars are expended.
Agreed. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission?
Oh, yes. I just want to thank you, too, for being here, and those were good points. I was going to ask the same question. This is a really tough one. I know you understand that. The commission's been involved, 6 years or so now, in first adopting the Wolf Plan. Great controversy. It was a very tough process. We knew that it would just get more difficult as we adjusted to the presence of wolves, and so I think we need to work more closely with elected officials like you, like Representative Short, because you've got good ideas. You are in touch with the people, so I'm appreciative of what you had to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Good to put a face with the name. I talked to you briefly on the phone, and there again, when we talked earlier on the phone, I ran, so I do have a dog in this fight, and I am concerned. What the right answers are, I think we're all still searching. And to tell you the truth, it's been a real eye-opener for me, because we tried to change some policy on mountain lions, and man, did we ever develop a storm over the deal. So my eyes have definitely been open to the environmental side of it. Like you said, we have real skin in the game when we're running cattle. A lot of these other groups are just emotional, but we still have to deal with it because it's just a fact of life. So hopefully you wrote down my phone number. If you have any issues, give me a call, because I think we're all still trying to figure out what that's about to do. I mean, nobody's standing up here beating on their chest saying this was the right way, because we're all still trying to feel our way through this deal to make it a workable thing. So keep charging ahead.
If I'm ever on the main thoroughfare going through Anatone, I'm going to swing by.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Mr. Wishaw, could you come up, please? And Mr. McPeak, it's your turn, and the 3 minutes are now back in.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and rest of the commission. My name's Marty McPeak. I'm the Cattle Producers of Washington president. On September 14th, Cattle Producers of Washington sent in its formal resignation from the Wolf Advisory Group. We find this action is necessary due to the ineffectiveness of the WAG at addressing wolf issues, as some of our producer members struggle to survive under the presence of this aggressive predator. Involvement of the WAG has consistently prevented any real action by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, creating hardship for the ranch families that have been negatively impacted by the wolf's presence. Continuing to participate in this advisory group would work in opposition to our organization's purpose of sustaining, improving, and protecting Washington State's cattle industry. We will no longer be part of a group that WDFW uses to delay action. In addition, we cannot in good faith to our members continue to participate in a group that ignores the devastation to ranch families by wolves and refuses to seriously discuss lethal removal. We also feel it is inappropriate to close WAG meetings to the public. And we were outraged with the unbelievable figure of $850,000 for a part-time conflict resolution consultant. And we understand there was legislation opposed to funding that position, but the department got the money out of its capital budget, which just doesn't seem appropriate. Just doesn't seem appropriate. Cattle producers of Washington will continue to advocate for sensible solutions to the wolf issue that prevent damage to ranches, to communities, and to local economies. We will not support those venues that diminish the impact to our ranch families. We call on the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission to abolish the WAG and take on real wolf management that results in fairness to those impacted by wolves. After multiple depredations, lethal removal is the only acceptable solution.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you. Calling up Freddie Giannacchini and Mr. Wishing. Up to you.
Now you know why I wanted to follow Monty, as he does such a good job. But thank you, members of the commission, chairman. It's a great opportunity to be here. It's the first time I've testified to you folks. A little bit about myself. I'm Ted Wishon, rancher from Stevens County. We've been in the business for years, and I'm a member of Cattle Producers of Washington and Stevens County Cattlemen's Association, past president of both organizations. In that tender of time when I was president of those organizations, quite a few times, I had to carry the water that I did not particularly care for the flavor of. You had to do that for your industry and for your group. So today, I am here as an individual representing myself and my family operation. So I volunteered. I'm here. I just wanted to come down and say that I support Kapow's departure from the WAG. Seeing that it's a lack of productivity, its ability to work on the burning issues that impact our industry. We've been in the business for 28 years in Stevens County. The industry skipped a generation, and then I came back to it, my wife and I. And our business environment, we started that business, and the environment has changed so much in the 28 years. We can accept a lot of the changes, whether they're environmental or whether they're different management practices. But when you come in and you rearrange the factory with an apex predator, it's very tough to adapt to that. It would be like having an assassin in Boeing's plant. You'd want to stop that. And the apex predator is a random assassin that is working on our cow herds. And that's a pretty tough one to adjust to. So our business environment has changed dramatically with the reintroduction of the wolves in our industry. And so that's a tough one for us to get a hold of. The WAG has shown its lack of ability to handle the conflicts, I believe. They tiptoe around it. It almost becomes like it's a foxhole for the department or for some of the people that have to deal with these issues. And so I support that removal of them, of our association from that group. It's a tough decision. It was debated long and hard at our meeting. It didn't come easy. I don't believe that it came with unanimous support, but it's something that when you carry that water, I believe that it had to be carried. And so I support that removal. With that, I got a few more minutes. I had an opportunity when Phil Anderson was the director and we sat in some smaller meetings, and I asked him in this group, what can they bring to the table and what can they do? I asked the director, I says, are you going to miss four paychecks before you talk to the secretary about where your paychecks are at? Are we going to lose four calves before we can talk to the department about where our paychecks are at? That's my retirement, my inheritance. And I asked Phil to put that underneath the WOLF plan. If that WOLF plan was to work, would you put your retirement plan on it? Well, since he's retired, I imagine he's got a pretty good retirement. But those are issues that need to be addressed. One parting thing is if we have a conflict resolution person hired, they should have built a conflict group, not managed the WAG. She should have built that group out of affected people and true stakeholders and started working on the conflicts, not try to manage a WAG that was put together by our state officials. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that the commission has an opportunity after public input, after we've heard some of these comments, to have a little discussion about, you know, what people are bringing to our attention. So we'll do that in a bit after we've heard everyone.
Thank you. Dale Argott, please. And
ready? I'd like to thank the commission for allowing me to speak here and giving us opportunity to air our grievances. I'd like to speak about the cougar issues in Stevens Ferry, Pontarie County, mostly in Stevens County, which I'm most familiar with. The harvest on cougars has been the same for the last 7-8 years. It's been a quota. The quota in 117 was raised by one cat with the current season coming up. We have sightings of cougars everywhere in the county. We have hundreds of people that come into our store with pictures of cougars on their trail cameras, pictures of cougars that they have purchased trail cameras, not for hunting, but to see what's coming in and disturbing their animals at night. We've had 5 cats this summer that were hit by vehicles in a 7-week period. We haven't had an elk hit by a vehicle. We've had one down by the Spokane Reservation. We're having 5 cats hit by vehicles. The number of cats has not been altered in harvest, yet the number of cats in the area and the community has risen dramatically. And I personally don't really care what the professors at WSU say about harvesting more cats. You'll have more conflict with them. We're having conflict everywhere. And people will not call it into the department. I've gotten to the point, standing behind the counter, that when someone comes in and says, I had a cat come in and kill my sheep, did you call it in? No, I didn't call the blankety blank blank blankety blank blank department. It's getting to a point I don't even want to tell people to call it in because they're so disappointed. Over the last 15 years, we voted on no hounds, no bait for bears, and no hounds for bears or cougars back in 1996. And the problem seemed to go away when we had a pursuit and a pursuit take season for the hounds. It leveled off that conflict area because a cougar heard a dog, it went the other way. Now it hears a dog, it comes in looking for a meal. We've got tremendous numbers of people that come in. We probably have anywhere from 4 to 8 people come in a week into the store that have had an animal attacked or killed. And they won't call the department. Dan Anderson is one of the game officers. He does a very good job. But the prior game department officers that were there would basically tell people, well, you don't know what you saw. And the list goes on and on, and we don't have enough time for that. But that's the reason why the complaints have not been called in. People won't call in. They just don't have any desire to call in and be treated like they don't know what they're talking about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't hear where you were from. Where is your store located?
In Colville.
Colville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I live in Chihuahua. I guided in this area for 20-something years. I've seen what happens out there, and I'm seeing it now. The cougar sightings are tremendous. And like I said, there was an article by Nate Pamplin in the Seattle Times that said the complaints in 2010 were 582, and to this year, in June, we'd only had 48 complaints. The complaints aren't being called in. They're there, and they're more widespread now than ever before.
Thank you. Commissioner Carpenter's question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not walking in your shoes, but it would seem logical to encourage the public to call in. If we need to streamline the call-in process so that the department can measure the level of increase and attacks by the cougars so that it can be dealt with in a real-time manner, I'm not exactly sure if I know what the process is, Nate, but it certainly sounds to me like we ought to figure out a way that the public doesn't feel like they're wasting their time or money calling in, registering an issue relative to a cat.
I agree with you 100%. And I tell everybody that comes in that sees a wolf, a cougar, or a bear, call it in. If need be, call in to 911 so it's a documented call and it doesn't get put in a round file.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brad?
Yes.
And I guess just I had to chuckle because of the storm that we had over us getting the quotas raised up. About a week after that, I was roaring by, there's a big pond right there above my house. This time of year, there's always animals there, and roaring down the road and looked over. I just thought they were three deer back to drive, and I'm going, those weren't deer. And there's three mountain lions right there. And run and got a couple of my friends, so I'm going, nobody will believe me, so I got to get some witnesses. But, no, I like you said, the sightings. I mean, there again, in my area when we grew up, I shot my first lion in 1985. And my dad and my uncle wouldn't speak to me for about a month because they had grown up there and never got one. And it was a big deal to see a mountain lion back then. Now it's just not an everyday occurrence. Literally, I average about 4 to 5 mountain lions. Granted, I'm outside doing things all the time and a unique situation. But no, the sightings of mountain lions, it's a real deal.
My girlfriend was supposed to come with me today but couldn't make it because she had to teach at Summit Valley School. But she was going to come in and testify on behalf of the school and the community and the children there about how many children are coming in, especially into the fall, winter months, sightings of cougars near the bus stops, sightings of cougars on their property. There were 3 cougars this year hit by vehicles in the Summit Valley area. We're only talking about a 7-mile stretch of road that these 3 cougars were hit by vehicles. We had 1 elk hit.
Thank you. Yes.
Wait, one more.
Just giving everybody time.
Thank you. I had a comment. A while back, I thought I'd take the time to ride around with one of our WFW law enforcement officers, and it was a great day, except only one thing of any significance happened. Nothing else happened the whole day. We couldn't find a fishing violation. In fact, I don't think people were out doing anything with Fish and Wildlife. But he did get a call, and from the day before, a cougar was suspected of attacking a dog, and he got the call that the cougar was definitely had attacked a sheep. He made a call to a certified hound hunter. That cougar was taken out that day. So maybe some of this, and it was just really, you know, bam, 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 bam. And so I would encourage, like what was said before, you know, that you don't forget about or keep encouraging people to make those calls, to report things. And maybe sometimes it's regional. Maybe sometimes there's too many cougars in one area to, you know, whatever. But, you know, I've seen it where it can be taken care of. So.
And I agree with you. And like I said, I mentioned Dan Anderson. He's done a great job. He gets there in a timely fashion as best as he possibly can. And people understand that there's other conflicts in other areas. What the commission doesn't understand is how the department in the past has treated people in those situations. Okay? There was a woman that had her dogs killed on her porch up in the Wedge and called the neighbor. The neighbor came over and dispatched the cat. The game department browbeat her for weeks, wanting to prosecute her and threatening her that if she didn't fess up to exactly what happened. Now, if you have a cougar and it's on your property and it's an issue and you've heard those type of things that have happened, do you really want to call the department? It only takes a few screw-ups to make people just go, hey, I don't want to deal with this. I have enough problems in my life. I don't need to have those issues with the game department, the very people I'm paying to represent me and put forth their effort into management of wildlife. And the cougar and bear population is running rampant, and it is completely out of control. People have gotten to a point where they're just going, hey, I'm not going to call the department. If I have an issue with it, I'll take care of it myself. And that's a sad state of affairs. It's leading towards anarchy. The department needs to get a grip and portray a better, user-friendly department and make people feel comfortable and want to call it in. In the last year, cougar sightings that people have come into our store has been probably 250 to 300 that just came into the store and made mention of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Points are well taken, and the comments, questions, I think, reflect that. Al Marks, please. And Dale?
I'm Dale Maggart. It's Maggart. About 15 minutes north of town here is where I live. I want to thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Director. Years ago, the Northeast Washington Wildlife Management Group up there in Chula, which I'm the secretary of, started working towards an antler point restriction, something that would help our dwindling herd, what we were seeing, our herd health up there in Northeast Washington. And after a number of years, the Stevens County Commissioners Fish and Wildlife Advisory Council, they came on board with us, and that was enough of a push to start getting some headway towards getting it implemented. There were stakeholder meetings set up. There was 10 different stakeholder groups. This is just history. Some of you know this, some of you don't. 7 of the stakeholder groups were in favor of an antler point restriction. There were a couple other options that were bandied about, one of them being limited entry and the other one being reduced seasons. The antler point restriction was decided was probably the most desirable of those three that would accomplish what we needed to do. This thing, when it finally went through and was approved, we fought that Region 1 from the get-go on this. They were against it. To the point to where we went from wanting the whole region down to just 2 units, at which time the Fish and Wildlife Department runs a survey, and one of the questions in the survey was, do you support or oppose an antler point restriction for all of Region 1? And they also used the word trophies in there as describing what this was going to do to our herd. Okay, it went through regardless. We finally got an antler point restriction. It's ran for 4 years. We were hoping for a 5-year plan. That got shot down at the insistence of Region 1 once again. I have no idea why, because in Region 1, the 2 units with the restrictions, 117 and 121, combined those 2 units last year, the buck harvest was over 300 deer more than the year before. And these are 4-point deer. These are not any buck. They're 4-point deer. They were the only 2 regions in the whole, only 2 units in the whole region that had an increase. The rest of the region combined lost two animals, drop two animals. And yet the thing is done away with. It's a huge success. It's the only thing that was actually starting to make sense up there and probably was going to start helping our deer herds. And it's gone. And I object to that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
I just encourage you to keep beating that drum because we live with antler restrictions where I'm at. And get those little spikers, 2 points, stand there and look at you dumber than a post. And I thank the Lord every day that we have the antler restriction because it does. And when it gets into the game numbers, if you're trying to manage your herd up and down, you don't do it with bucks. It's with either sex permits if you need to drop the numbers. And that's the way to do it. So, no, I hope you keep beating that drum.
Probably will.
And I'll get your name right next time. Dave Murphy, please. Mr. Mertz.
Director, Mr. Chairman, Commission, I'm going to beat on the same drum again. My name is Alan Martz. I'm a member of the Northeastern Washington Wildlife Group, the Stevens County Fish and Wildlife Advisory Council, and a GMAC member. First of all, I'd like to thank the Commission for holding their ground on the cougar quotas. Every little bit helps. I'd like to talk about the decision the Commission made to drop the antler point restrictions in 117 and 121. I think there were a couple of new commissioners on the board here that didn't have time to fully evaluate the information that was given them. In Moses Lake, you were presented a lot of positive information that showed the APRs were working. Jerry Nelson put on a slideshow that only told part of the story, leaving out the positive. Jerry twice skipped over a slide in that presentation that showed GMU 121 having the highest success rate in Region 1. You only saw it for about a half a second, but I had seen the slideshow previously, and he skipped that. That was a pretty important statistic considering it was a four-point restriction. We're going to have a huge increase this year in harvest for 1 or 2 years with the antler point restrictions. We'll have a really good buck harvest, and with rule changes, almost double the doe harvest. What that's going to do for recruitment of our whitetail population is 35% below our 10-year average now. The fawn doe ratios are at record lows. This is really going to hurt things. If this keeps up unchecked, we eventually will meet the 10-year harvest average, which has gone from 8,000 to 10,000 to 5,000 or less. How far are we going to let that drop? The next thing we'll see is a target number of 9 to 11 deer counted per transect mile lowered so the department can reach that number. On the DFW website, Hunting Prospects, Region 1, Modern Firearm, for the last 3 years, for hunter harvest, density, and success combined, GMU 121 was ranked number one, best overall hunting deer opportunity. So what's the department do? Drastically change it. We're going to wipe out everything we've gained in 1 or 2 years. Our whitetail have continued down for the last 15 years. The only GMUs that showed real positive growth are 117 and 121. The decision to remove antler point restrictions and greatly increase the doe harvest will prove to be the worst management decision the department and the commission has made in many years in Region 1. If this overall steady decline is the best the department can do, I think it's time for some new management rather than continue this slide. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the commission? Thank you. Mr. Duvier, please.
And thank you. Thank you, commissioners. I understand that there is a committee of concerned folks that are on both sides of the aisle of deer elk baiting that are meeting at this time, and they will be giving a recommendation to you as to the future of what we're going to be seeing in Washington State. I came here to try and give you a different perspective rather than an emotional one. Texas is a state that's 96% owned privately and probably is one of the highest managed states that has ever been long-term used for whitetail resources and gaining and doing what's best for them. And in Texas, they don't care what your emotion is. They simply do what they believe is best. There are mountainous reports that are available out on the internet, such as ones from Dr. Neil Kroll, that highlight both the pros and cons of the deer baiting issue. And it's staggering when you read the pro side. They're learning that through what they call supplemental feeding, our state calls baiting, that their conception rates, their weaning rates, the immune system of the deer are all greatly improved by supplementally feeding those deer at the first signs of fall, as opposed to the way we do it in our state, with the game department only being able to intervene in the wintertime. Much of the benefit is lost to the deer herd as a result of not starting early enough. But in Washington State, we found a way to have our cake and eat it too, because we have allowed the sportsmen to create a self-funded supplemental feeding program. And I'm not sure that we can really appreciate how large that feeding program is, except that I could give you an example. At the Walmart here up on the north side of Spokane in the Shadle District, they brought in 30 pallets of corn. 30 pallets of corn, and I asked the manager, is that going to be enough to get you through the year? And he said, not at all. Dan, who owns a Hooterite farm out here in the east part of our community, he sells corn to the local hunters out here, not by the truck full, but by the silo full. So we found a way to have our cake and eat it too. We've got the benefits for our deer herd to help the brows not be quite so damaged, and with the fires that we've had this year, help the missing brows be supplemented while that ground has a chance to regrow by supplementally feeding our deer herd. And I just want you guys to look at a little bit more of the science behind it as opposed to just the emotional part of it. Lastly, I'd like you to understand that my land is, I'm the only person without a disability that hunts my land. I use my land for Wounded Warriors, Make-A-Wish, church foundations, and other groups who are looking for a place for people to hunt. My son and I developed the land to do it together, and in 2010, he was struck by heart disease, and I almost lost him. If I lose this, I'm going to lose him as a deer hunter. Please don't take that away from my family.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Yes.
I've got a report for you that each one of you shortly.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, I appreciate your testimony. And I just wanted to make sure, I think we all understand on the commission that the group that is now looking into that was charged to look at all the information just as you've suggested, to look at the scientific information, to look at the data from veterinarians, to look at positive pros and cons of, you know, what feeding, what type of feeding is good or bad. I think when the original decision was being considered, there was just too few of options. It was either keep baiting altogether as it is or ban it altogether. And I don't think most of us felt that was significant enough alternatives. So to be clear, this group is not coming to tell us what to do. We charge them to create many more alternatives. It could include several of the things you're talking about, and hopefully will be a good compromise in the middle. So
that's what I'd like to see. I don't think that the answer to every question isn't yes, which means the answer to every question then is not no. There's got to be some ground in the middle where we can find a way to maintain the benefits but control the problems that I know that you're facing. I've kind of got an ear listening for me on that group, and I hope to be able to talk to them next Saturday, but as luck would have it, I wasn't invited to get to come. So I'm here to represent a rational point of view, a point of view that understands that not everything about this program is bad and that there are some benefits that comes from it. And I'm proud of the sportsmen that are funding this. I'm proud of what we do. My personal budget is going to be about $500 this year to supplemental feed the animals on my property. And it's about a mile from the Carpenter Fire, which now is missing 65,000 acres of habitat. Well, I know that habitat will grow back. What are they going to do this winter? What is it that they will have for a resource to sustain them until that habitat starts to grow back? And so we do have a lot of missing habitat in our state right now, and the last couple summers have been awfully devastated. So.
Thank you for your comments, and we have one more question, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You brought a couple new things to the today that I hadn't heard. I remember back in Moses Lake, I think we heard multiple times about truckloads of apples and apples and apples and more apples and
right.
bigger apples and rotten apples. And
yep.
I don't even remember a discussion about supplemental feeding with corn. There may have been, and I've missed it. But how do you connect what you're talking about doing with this corn supplemental feeding with this apple baiting And I mean, give me some linkage of how you view that.
How I'd love to see it perceived is I'd love to see it set down by in a volume. How much can you use? Can control that kind of commercialization of it? And then I'd like you to control what we can use, because fall's the time for protein. What those animals need is protein. That's what builds their bodies and their immune systems to sustain themselves during a winter time period. So a little sweet apple just kind of drives them in there. If you throw out five or six apples, they'll come in and they'll get it. But they'll hit your area that you're using. And the cool thing about it is all my game cameras show it to me. I never see with my eyes 90% of the deer that feed on there, because they're all nocturnal. Yeah. They feed all night long. You got a half hour in the morning and a half hour at the end of the day, and yet we fed them for 10 straight hours. And so we are doing a great service for them that has not as much as you think. You can see the data, what our rates are as far as what our harvest rates are. They're not through the roof, ridiculous. They're just, the guys have been testifying about it right here before you on other subjects. So I'd like to see it controlled by volume and makeup of what you can use.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
I think that's the goal of the group that's working on it, too, because as Commissioner Keeney said, what we were given, the option of thumbs up or thumbs down, as you said, isn't the right way to do it. So it's trying to find that, and input from individuals like yourself is extremely valuable to help us get that information that we need. So thank you very much.
Take care of my disability people.
Thank you.
Jeannie Damerel, please. And Mr. Bouvier. Did I get your name right, sir?
Close enough.
Close enough.
Thanks, Chairman and fellow commissioners, past commissioners, and the director. It's nice to have you in Eastern Washington. I see this is a welcome crowd here, and I think if even though you got most of the population on the west side, about half of the hunting and fishing community is on this side. And we hope to two new Eastern Washington representatives make sure that you come and see us more often. There's lots of input over here, but not many are going to travel to Olympia to share their thoughts with you. I got two issues I want to touch on just briefly. They've already been brought up today so far, but the little history on our Wolf Working Group, to which I unfortunately was part of way back when we started the Wolf thing, ended up with 18 people on it, went to 17, ended up with 16, ended up with 9 people making a decision, all from one side of the decision. The minority group had a second opinion and a second plan that never even got representative in the plan. The commission was pretty well forced to accept that Wolf working plan because of the detailed SEPA involvement and elimination of alternatives. Unlike the director's promise that once we got that proposal, we were willing and able to change any part of it we wanted to. But because of the cost and the length of time to change it, we adopted that poor plan. But we did put in some things that made it adaptive. And the whole key and acceptance in the passing by the commission is on the basis that we could make that a working document, not a cut-and-stone document, and we could adapt it as we go. That plan needs to be adapted now. It's a failure. It doesn't represent the whole working group of the wolf industry, and I promise you saw some come to light now. I think you don't have to open up the whole thing, but I think the number of packs, breeding packs, is now inappropriate. Three regions is inappropriate. Maybe we should go with two. And adding to the SEPA on a limited time constrained basis might be the way to get something done to it. Spending $850,000 for a consultant to bring in, to come get an agreement between two groups that will never agree, have never agreed in Europe, have never agreed in the 900 states that's got wolves, are totally opposed to each other. You've got the environmentalists who make their living by creating social conflict, raise their funds, get their paycheck. That conflict's got to continue or they don't have a job. The cattlemen don't care if they have wolves or not as long as they can protect their property. And those two decisions are never going to get weighed out and balanced in a conflict resolution. We got a new director we brought in, hopefully with wolf experience. It was one of the criteria we wanted for it. We've got new conflict people involved. We've got a new person in charge of conflict. And We're paying $850,000 for somebody to do their jobs for them. We've never had success on surveys to speak of. The Wildlife Committee runs their job on basically somebody else coming in on a consultant or survey basis. It's time for people to step up, do their job, and you commissioners hold them accountable for that. We put in the performance agreements with the director. The director should be passing that down to those people and hold their feet to the performance of what they're supposed to be doing. $850,000 could pay for a hell of a lot of our staff, or we don't need them. And that's their job, is to solve this problem. And it's your job to make sure they do it. And unfortunately, it's very difficult, and because the time as a volunteer group to dedicate yourself to that issue is astronomical. But it's a tough issue, and I'm appalled that I would refuse that $850,000 if I was still on the commission. It's just something we don't need to spend. It's not going to solve it. It's not going to resolve the conflict. They're going to come back with you the same alternatives you got in front of you right now. It might appease somebody for a while, but nothing to do. So, and one last comment on the 4-point you've heard about. Was one of the most successful things that's happened to Eastern Washington in terms of recovery of the deer population. The 10-year average, as was pointed out, is $8,000 to $10,000. One of the things that we saw in the past was that the department continues to bring down averages so they can meet their objective. They're talking in your new sports manual this year that $5,000 is an acceptable level. That's an old school, old trick they use in the Blue Mountains to clock them, the mule deer population, is they manage the population down to their level of incompetency. So hold those objectives where they should be, make them get them back up there. And we have a lot of good biologists that would get out in the field and tell you what's really going on, we'll get it done. So I know you guys got a tough job. I've been there, so I appreciate your efforts. And it's something that we're making progress on. I think we've done a lot of good things, but there's always going to be conflict. And to try to make it go away is just not going to happen. So you live with it, manage with it, and do what you got to do. So,
thank you, Gary. Yes.
Thank you. Good to see you again, Gary. I wanted to go back to and just ask a question of you. I think it was your first point about revising the Wolf Plan. And I couldn't agree 100% more with you on that, because I think it was intended to be an adaptive management plan. It was intended to take in what we learn as we go and make some changes. And I think there's some changes that could be made to make it better and make it work better. However, the legislature, there was a bill in front of the legislature that essentially said, let's do that, and it got voted down. I don't think the commission's feet are tied in any way from looking at the Wolf Plan, but it seems like there's mixed signals coming out on this. So how do you take that?
I don't bother me one bit. The commission's job is to manage their resources. They've been sworn to do that. It's totally your responsibility. It's not the legislature's responsibility. They would like to make it a political issue, and one of the reasons why you guys aren't elected is to keep the politics out of our resources. And the more the politicians get involved with the resources, the more trade-offs you have to make, and the resource suffers. So, and when they want to give you money, if that's not the good use of money, you shouldn't take it. Because there's other things we can do with $850,000 that are a lot more important than having an inappropriate, unbalanced, unrealistic group of people meet for the next 2 or 3 years to come up with something you already know. We have all these other states that I visited, and you guys know it, most of it too. The same problems, the same conflict, were in Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Europe, Canada, Alaska, and we aren't learning anything? I mean, this problem is the same goddamn problem. And now you paid $850,000 for somebody to come in and tell you, yeah, you got the same problem. You got to be crazy. So anyway, I'm a little, I guess, hot on the collar on this, but it always bothers me to waste money, and that's from where I come from, and there's a lot of stress, like I said before, and we're always trying to figure out how to get money to do better things for the resource. This isn't one of them, so.
Good to see you, Gary.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Tina Weinkoop, please, and Jeannie.
Much for allowing me to speak today. I want to thank you, first of all, as individuals, for being willing to serve on this board. I can see that your work is enormous and probably very stressful. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the board itself providing this portion of the agenda. I'm here to address something, the little smaller things on the landscape. I live on 13 acres in North Spokane County of peepine bunch grass habitat with a forested wetland. I spend all of my free time running out to the sagebrush in the Lake Creek watershed on BLM lands and fish and wildlife lands that are around Swanson Lake, Twin Lakes, and Coffee Pot Lakes. I go there because of the enormous biodiversity that is in that location. My property we purchased because of the biodiversity that was available on it. It was undisturbed land in Spokane County, hard to find. It had not been plowed. It had not been grazed. It was just natural landscape. We haven't done anything. We don't run rigs on it. We don't do anything on it, and yet I've watched the biodiversity collapse on my property in the last 15 years. And this is largely, you know, I'm in the urban interface, and we have a lot of deer and later wild turkeys. The turkeys love the bunch grass seeds. They feed on all of them. By the end of summer, the bunch grass is not going to seed. The introduced species on the periphery are moving in rapidly because no one wants to eat those. So they get to go to seed, and our native plants don't. I've lost most of my wildflowers. Out in sagebrush, I actually don't see a lot of human interference with the wonderful things going on out there. People fish. The bees love the water coming off the boats as they bring them out of the lake, and they all go to the boat launches to gather mud and drink. The pollinators are responsible for probably 95% of the pollination in North America is done by our native pollinators. They are largely unsung heroes, and they're largely not seen, not noticed. I have 10,000 images I've taken of native bees. It is just an incredible diversity and an incredible story, too long for today. But they depend on a biodiversity in plants. And the plants are under enormous stress from the drought and from the fires. And I guess I would like to recommend that the Fish and Wildlife Department consider adding a section to study and to actually document what plants are on the landscape now, who is pollinating them, what are the requirements of those plants and those animals, so that when other decisions are made about these other issues where we see a larger animal that, you know, we focus on, we can at least consider the bottom of the food chain, because most of those animals are dependent on the plants. And the plants won't be there without pollinators. I saw this spring the erigerons were blooming at Twin Lakes, and there was nobody attending them. The bees in 2014 were there. In 2015, they weren't. So just the weather alone can set things back. And when it's set back, then they begin a silent retreat. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I don't know if you know David Jennings.
Yes.
Okay, because we just received a letter from him, and he said he's taken 23, or he's indexed 23 of the states, or something like that.
I just learned that, too, that he
was traveling around. He was doing the bumblebees.
Okay.
Trying to cover all the bees would be
right.
A so lifetime job.
I just want to make sure you two were in the same buzz.
Thank you. Protection of the biodiversity.
Right. Yeah, we were just made aware of that. At least I was in the letter last week, so it was just timely that you were doing it.
I did submit a letter, which they said they'd put in your packets later. Okay.
Thank you very much. Dave Duncan, please, and Tina. Oh, I can do that. Okay. So, Dave DeShield, please, and County, and that you will have your more than 3 minutes.
I don't know if I can stand it or not.
So, as a county commissioner, so yes, ma'am.
Good morning. I don't have a cowboy hat,
but I am a person very concerned with the biodiversity and the stewardship of the land for all wildlife and domestic animals. I think we've heard a lot from the lobbyists for the cattle industry. I'd like to say something about all the animals that have been impacted by these incredible monster fires we've had this summer. And I really didn't come to talk about cattle as much as well, let me give a little background. My husband's family are cattle ranchers, and they have for a long time in Stevens County. So I'm not biased one way or another as much as I just feel we're not hearing about the wildlife. I did hear from someone in the Seattle area that they were so excited to get their hunting license this year and come over to the east side of the state in order to hunt the animals that have fled the monster fires. And that broke my heart. Those animals are compromised already. And we need to think about what they're going through after the last month and a half, and maybe call off some of these hunters. And even during the Carpenter Road fire, which was coming on to my husband's 160 acres, there were reports from the Fire Control Center that bow hunters needed to be careful about setting fires while hunting and, you know, not having cook fires or whatever. And I just thought, what about the animals? They don't stand a chance when they're fleeing for their lives. I also read something about 30 years ago that really impacted the way I look at wolves. They are part of the balance of nature. And I would invite every lobbyist here for the cattle industry to maybe look or read a book that covers the whole ground. It's by Barry Lopez. It's called Of Wolves and Men. And it goes back into the history of Europe when wolves were eradicated out of great fear. Grimm's fairy tales covered it. It came with the European contact to this part of the world. Just look at other perspectives than resource management for your profit. That's all I would like you to consider today. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Keeney, please.
Talkative today.
Please, Tina.
Yes.
I'd just like to speak to the last two speakers, and sometimes I think people can think, what's the big deal? It's just bees, or what's the big deal? It's just beetles, or, you know, the whole biodiversity can be looked at as pitting, you know, livestock owners against nature lovers. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to go to Montana this spring and have some ranchers explain to me how their operation improved by changing one way they were worming their cattle to a different medicine that allowed the dung beetles to come back, which allowed the cowpives to be broken down within days, allowing more fertilizer into their soil using a good rotational system, trampling that grass and organic matter back into the soil, created a higher water holding capacity. And neighbors who weren't doing this, grass was already dried up. Theirs were still green and producing a lot of production, and their bottom line was affected. So their focus on the holistic look at things, which happened to include dung beetles, and I never spent a lot of time thinking about dung beetles, but it was really interesting. You know, it was tying together what you're saying, the biodiversity, as well as a profitable cattle ranch. And it was neat seeing people that were doing it.
And directly in line with that, the wine industry has discovered that if they don't use as many herbicides and pesticides, the bees come in, they pollinate, and they have a far better yield. And to the supplemental feeding of deer in the winter, I mean, they used to do pretty well. The grain that the Hutterites grow is GMO. It's also mostly corn. I know it's growing on our family members' land. They lease the land. They have discovered that people with diabetes who cut back on corn-fed beef reduce their symptoms of diabetes almost to non-existence. Well, Hunters need to think about these corn-fed deer. What are they doing when they eat them? Small details, as small as the dung beetle, but vastly important.
Thank you. Dave Duncan, and Dave, I got you confused with your brother. I've done that before, I know, so your brother has come up. You get the 3 minutes. Your brother, he can go all day.
For the record, I'm Dave Dashiel, not the commissioner. We have a cattle and sheep outfit, and today I should be coming back from Miles City ram sale with a truckload of bucks, getting ready for the breeding season for sheep. Instead, I'm sitting here wondering if I'm even going to be in the sheep business, you know, by the end of the year. We got done lambing this spring, well, middle of June, got done lambing, ready to go out on our range, and there's a wolf pack sitting right there. You know, we got the collar information, everything else. We can't go behind the house. That's where the wolf that was giving us fits last year, he moved north. He's right there where we were the year before. They said, no, you're not going there because we're not putting you any place where there's known wolves. And so that cut down my options a whole bunch. So we wound up hauling them to Eltopia, to our winter place, put them in a dirt lot, 100-degree weather, been feeding them hay since, I think, the 6th of July. We finally got them out on a grass field. They're starting to recover from all that good treatment we give them in that hot weather. But anyway, they're looking better. And when the wolves were killing them cattle up there on Chewila Creek, there was an article in the Capital Press, you know, talking about that, and then a tail end of the article. Well, good news. Their huckleberry pack has had no depredations this year. Well, no kidding. The cows were, or the sheep were 150 miles away in a woven wire fence, and there's not any wolves in Eltopia yet. Some other, you know, we couldn't use our mountain range there behind the house. The neighbors to the north of us, they didn't have enough guts to turn their cows out on their range. They picked up, and they're down around Quincy or someplace where they went. They had the opportunity. They had some feed to go to a couple weeks ago. Well, right there before the Carpenter Road fire got up to us. They had the opportunity to leave, so they did. But they're, you know, they're paying leases up there and haven't been able to use them. So just because there's no depredation going on doesn't mean everything's wonderful, because it cost us a lot of money to have them sheep perform poorly. Then the dog got attacked in August. There was him and little jag of sheep, a couple hundred head of replacement ewe lambs, yearlings. There were five dogs, them sheep. You know, I don't know exactly where it took place, but it was on the place north of us. Oh, geez, I ain't even through my list. But anyway, you know, we've done all the non-lethal stuff. It has had little to no effect. Sooner or later, they're going to come in. There was loggers, firefighters, helicopters, ground crews, everything. They said they seen the wolf sitting up there on the hillside watching them work. And, you know, last year, Labor Day was creeping up when we was having that big wreck. Boy, we want to get out of here. 3-day weekend coming. We don't want any bad phone calls. See ya. And compensation, you know, we've got a little bit, but we figured it cost us from $60,000 to $80,000, depending on how you want to figure it. And so, you know, how much can a guy stand? You know, I don't want to be the first domino to fall, but if the purpose of the wolf plan is to run us off, it's starting to work. So anyway, I won't take up any more time. Thanks.
Go ahead, Miranda.
I can assure you, can you hear me?
Yep.
I can assure you that the purpose of the plan is not to run you off. That was definitely never considered. And so I appreciate you coming and sharing your continued struggles. How many sheep did you lose?
We lost over 300.
And there, I remember the last time we saw you last year, you were talking about missing some sheep, too.
Yep.
Did you ever find any of those?
Nope. They didn't show up anywhere. And if they're alive, they'll show up. You know, you might not get them all, but you're going to get a good percentage of them.
Okay. Well, I hope you continue to, you know, come before us, tell us what's going on, help come up with constructive ideas about how we fix this, because it's we understand how difficult, at least I understand how difficult it is.
Yeah, see, I'm relatively a short timer in the sheep business. I've only had sheep for about 30 years, and I don't think I have another 30 years to rebuild this thing if I have to sell out. And, you know, if I sell out, I want to do it on my own terms. I want to be old and decrepit and can't do it anymore. I don't want to do it because I'm basically getting run out of the country.
Thank you, Chair. Well, Dave, hopefully we can have a talk over a beer one of these times and not over a microphone like we used to. But and everybody looks at stuff a little different. Now, your summer allotment is on Hancock ground, right?
Correct.
To me, that's huge, because there again, whether you're for or against public grazing, yeah, it's on public ground, so then
private
that comes
ground
with a different set of rules. But where this is private property,
yeah,
to me, this is huge, because call me a right-wing nut, but the cornerstone of this Constitution is based on private property rights. And if Hancock decides they want to be able to lease ground to Dave and he wants to run sheep on there, I think this is an altogether different deal. I really do. And now, I used to be in the sheep business. It's a tough racket right from the start. Predators are always part of the issue. But we need to do something to resolve this deal, because what we're asking, the losses we're asking these people to take, is unacceptable. Totally unacceptable.
It
you buy donuts.
See you in an hour.
You know, talking, you know, lethal removal, you know, it's only happened very few times in the whole scheme of things. And we're way past shooting our way out of it. Just like when they removed the wedge pack. You know, the next year, their wolf numbers were still higher than they were the year they removed them. They shot that one female up on us, and the wolf population was 30% higher than it was. At the last WAG meeting, they told us, well, we're expecting more depredations because of more wolves, and we don't have any more people to go out there in the brush and jump up and down and holler. So, you know, if I'm sounding a little bit mad, it's probably because I'm just more than a little bit. And so anyway,
one other thing really quickly, and I know that there's a lot of pressure, but I hope that you will stay on the WAG deal. I really do. It's a bad process, but it's what we've got and what we have to deal with, and I do. I just ask you to stay part of the problem. I know, or part of the,
yeah,
hopefully probably part of the problem. That was a misspoke.
I've been accused
part
of that.
Part of the issue, because Washington is Washington. And we're going to have to work with the environmental community, and we need some people with a clear mind like you on there, and definitely have skin in the game. So, thank you.
I just agree with Commissioner Hosemiller on that, Dave, and maybe ask you, I know it's a tough spot you're in there, but and it takes a lot of time, and you don't have a lot of time right now. You got other things on your mind, but if that Wolf Advisory Group was moving to a point where they could give a clear direction, with environmental groups agreeing, the ranching community agreeing, that this is what it takes to allow non-lethal when we need it and we get it. I mean, that was some of the lessons with Director Anderson when we went to Montana, and I never forgot it, was do everything possible non-lethal, but when it comes time and you need lethal, do it. And I guess if the WAG would get you to that point, I think it's still a valuable organization. Set aside all discussions of 870,000. I think people getting together, discussing their things they don't agree on and coming up with solutions is valuable. And I would hope you'd stay as well. And I don't know what your intentions are, but I think it's worth it.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do either, because I'm getting pushed and pulled from every direction. And, you know, no matter what I do, somebody's going to be mad. And I guess big whoop. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'd like to have that beer.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, one more.
You know, Dave, I want to echo what the two J's down there at the end of the table are saying. I think it's really important that, you know, there's representatives on the WAG board that are they're involved with theory. And, you know, as we say, is that a social issue or an emotional issue? You bring real facts to the table. This is the impacts. And we can't do everything to satisfy you. We're not going to do everything to satisfy them. There's a balance that has to be struck. And if they realize, you know, the impacts, the actual economic impacts that it does to your industry, you know, that's sheep, we have to consider cattle, your representation showing solid evidence of the impact has to be represented at those committee meetings. And I, again, encourage you to stay with it and keep your side of the story in front of that group.
We can come to all these agreements at the WAG, and we're maybe getting this much done, but the real test is going to be when something gets killed, hits the limit, the department says go lethal. Then we'll know exactly where everybody is. And, you know, we can stand a few wolves in the country, but when they get to be a problem, they have to be taken care of. Someplace in that idiot wolf plan, it says that. And as soon as when we first seen that wolf plan after it was finalized, we said, we're done with the sheep business. But I thought I could just be a little bit tougher than what I have been.
Mr. Carpenter.
The position we're in, unfortunately, we only get over this side of the hill a couple times a year, and maybe we can change that over time. But, and I think it's probably somewhat likely that the commission is going to have to re-engage in the wolf plan. And if we don't get these types of heartfelt exposures to those of you out in the field doing this, whether it's raising sheep or raising cattle, we get comments from commercial fishermen, we get comments from recreational fishermen. If we don't get the heartfelt, real truth about what's going on, it really makes it hard for us to get our arms around it. And I mean that in all seriousness. If what you bring to the table, I remember last year we were in the Tri-Cities. You know, I'm a small business owner. I made a comment about that to you and your wife, and I feel strongly about that. We got to know what's going on out there. We can't always hear it third party. And if we have to engage, we will.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Shields, for coming again. I will never forget your testimony about this time last year in Pasco. It was very moving and enlightening for a city slicker like myself. Just a couple of things. I do appreciate the information about kind of the effect on your business in terms of, you know, having to move your sheep in different locations and the costs incurred. Because I will tell you that, you know, I read the WAG summary reports that that we get on the commission, and it doesn't tell that story. What it does say is that, well, we don't have depredations in such and such area, or they're limited, or they're less. So it, you know, and I don't mean that as a criticism necessarily, but I think to hear it from you is, and that type of information is very valuable. And as far as your participation on continued participation on the WAG, you know, that's certainly your call, but you know, I can tell you from my own experience kind of working on committees like this and, you know, sharing your level of frustration. At the end of the day, and I wish I came up with this phrase, but I didn't, but I think Larry knows it, is that if you're not at the table, you'll be on the table.
Correct.
That's
so
true.
You know, I, this is a very personal decision for you to make, but I would echo other commissioners and their encouragement for you to participate. But again, it's your call ultimately.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Wes McCart, please. And Wes is the Stevens County Commissioner, so 3 minutes or more. You're done.
Yes, Vice Chair, Commissioners, excuse me, Director and Assistant Director, I appreciate being here today to testify. I'm, excuse me, I had the committee for WCA on Sportsman Wildlife Rancher ESA Committee. I'm also on the WAG. I represent Washingtonians for Wildlife Conservation on the WAG, which is an organization that has 55 sportsmen's groups underneath it. WAG certainly is a discussion here today. Mr. Kehoe kind of stole my thunder. Both organizations believe that we should stay on the WAG. Thank you, Director. Should stay on the WAG because if you're not at the table, you're going to be on the menu. And we feel pretty strong about that. We feel that I have been involved in a number of groups just like this where they were very difficult. One was on water. This process is a very, very slow process. And I think there's been way too much expectations that the WAG is going to solve the problems in wolf conflict. I mean, it's going to take a long time to see if we even have any common ground, to see if we can get somewhere with this. Francine is concerned, I think she's doing a wonderful job. I'm just as much shocked as everybody else that we're paying that organization $850,000. I didn't realize that. But she's done a pretty good job. She kind of earned her money. We've only had 2 WAG meetings. Excuse me. And they're really just about process, trying to find how everybody feels about some things. I know it's a touchy-feely deal, but it's a process. It's a slow process. So both of the organizations that I represent today are going to hang in there, but I believe that the commission and the department needs to manage wolves according to the wolf plan and the protocol that is set out, and hopefully the WAG can come up with some common ground on some issues. really, I came here to cover Dave's backside. I mean, I am terribly upset about this. It's been 14 months since the tear-jerking session in Pasco. His claims are not paid. He's kicked off basically off of private ground because of the problems that the conflict created with the landowners. He's got his sheep in a feedlot, and if there was any money having sheep in the summertime in a feedlot, the feedlots would be full of sheep. I mean, we're basically putting him out of business. Now, this very subject was discussed in the WAG. Early on, there was a lot of discussion about not putting livestock producers out of business. There was 100% agreement that that wouldn't happen. That's just a baby step. But then we got into the hardcore discussion that we had a member in WAG that was being put out of business. WAG did agree that maybe they could, that they would roll up their sleeves, get their hands dirty, and see if they could affect the landowner and to an extent that Dave could get back out on that lease or another lease, hopefully could provide some protection for his sheep. I don't know if Dave can even do this. I mean, he's got lots of pressure within his community. I'll stop.
Thank you, Chairman.
I was appreciative of what you were saying, so I was glad that the chair wasn't jumping on you to call your time.
But at some time I have to.
That's his responsibility. That. But I heard that you were responsible for a breakthrough moment during the last WAG meeting.
I just threw the fat in the fire is all I did.
Yeah, well, people were impressed because you brought it down to a human level and put the onus on those who are worried about lethal removal of wolves. You put the onus on them to look at the consequences of any lack of management.
And that discussion actually got to, you know, if the protection didn't work, then we were going to have to solve the problem and keep Dave in business. I mean, we got that far. It was kind of a milestone. It was only our second meeting, and it ran over 3 or 4 hours with this last discussion.
So I do appreciate that you were responsible for that reshifting of orientation of the discussion. What do you and you've already stated that your group is probably going to stay in it, is going to stay in the process. Do you have any thoughts about how we can fix this now? Where do we go from here? How do we bring the cattle producers to the table? What would it take?
I'm not going to go there at all. But
because you have understanding.
I have been in that Menashtash group. We were 12 years. We were 12 years, including getting all the infrastructure done. You know, it was an $18 million project in the end. But it started off pretty tough. I mean, we had 21 attorneys in the room, and it was about water. And we got there. And I think I wouldn't be at WAG if I didn't believe we might be able to get there. But the expectations were way too high. And even when we talked about closed sessions, really the closed sessions weren't just about process. They weren't even about wolves. The process part of this is going to take some time. And hopefully we can allow this commission to manage the wolves and the department correctly and not the courts. And that's my concern. One of my concerns, didn't you?
Thank you. That's a real concern as well.
Just quickly, Dave, I'd like to thank you for your participation in the WAG, your open attitude, and I think bringing to that table your years of wisdom for staying the course in some tough situations. I think that's what it takes, and I couldn't agree with you more. It's not a short-term fix. Working on these conflicts and getting agreement is going to take time. And that was a milestone, I think, that you were instigating or helping to happen at the last meeting, which I heard through a lot of grapevines, was everybody was very eager about that, eager to move forward, eager to look at things on a hard basis of, you know, okay, if the goal is not is to have wolf recovery but not have it affect ranchers and livestock owners, definitely not put them out of business, and we have to look hard at when lethal action needs to be taken, and everybody agree on it, and that's where you were headed. So I just commend you and appreciate the wisdom you bring to that table.
Commissioner.
Yes. I was glad to hear your comment about the fact that these closed sessions were a necessary feature, that you weren't trying to hide anything from the public. I mean, that shocked me. I knew there was a lot of controversy about having the first session closed. And then to hear about the second session being closed as well was a concern of mine. And I'm glad to hear from a member that that was a necessary thing to do, and there wasn't anything that would be that took place at that time that it really affected the decisions, but merely the process. However, I also have a concern about now there's been two meetings about process. When are we going to get to substance?
It's a slow process. It could be several more meetings before we get to substance. The December meeting is going to be the first meeting with geared toward what's happening to the cattlemen. Second meeting was the Pro Wolfers opinions, and we had to listen. There's going to be a meeting in October. I don't know what the agenda is. But the December meeting is going to be about hunting and the culture of hunting, the North American conservation model. I'm kind of working on that. We're getting as good as we can. I would hope that some of you people would come. We're investing heavily in a guest speaker because that's a subject that has not been broached really in wolf management. But the only reason we're here is because the hunters have provided the dollars and the management for the last 100 years to have the wildlife. My biggest concern in the WAG is the managing wolves as part of the whole with wolves and wildlife and taking care of the livestock producers. That's where I see where we have to go. So there's going to be more process in the December meeting. I just think there's been way too much expectations from the WAG at this point in view, and I think we need to go the course. I'm not promising anybody here that we'll get there.
Was the December meeting, you said, on hunting?
The 13th and 14th in Spokane, and there will be the hunters will have their presentations. We'll have
guest speakers. That's hunting in general, not hunting wolves. I mean, that's just...
Well, it's our perspective.
Okay.
We had to listen to the preservation community's perspective on wolves. We listened to the cattlemen's in the first one. The third one is going to be on the hunter's perspective.
Okay, cool.
That's going to be here.
It'll be here, yes. And I would really appreciate it if you'd come because hunters are going
to
try to do a good program on wildlife management in the last 100 years, our contributions to it, and
what is
how we feel about it.
Do you have a date yet in December?
13th and 14th, and the program is not put together. Again, you could say that's inaction, but
yeah.
I think it's very important that the pro-wolf side of this, I don't want to say animal rights, maybe I should cite it, there are some of them at the table, understand the hunting part of this too, because it's an extremely important part of the conversation.
Well, thank you. Your representation is needed, your comments are appreciated, and we look forward to the future of more of those. Now we'll move on to Commissioner McCart, and let me call up Representative Short, please.
Chairman, members of the commission, Mr. Director, for the record, my name is Wes McCart, I'm Stevens County Commissioner, and I'm actually going to change up the subjects a little bit. I'm more than happy to spend hours talking about the others, but I want to talk to you about Canadian lynx and the Caldwell National Forest for a minute. Yesterday, I was involved in coordinating effort on the Caldwell National Forest Plan. Any of you that have been involved in updating a national forest plan have spent more than a decade working on it, and that's what the process has been here. But it has some real, real world effects on the local communities, on our economy, on the people, on the resources, the wildlife. They all have to be considered. The Canadian Lynx, on behalf of the state, Mr. Nate Pamplin put some comments in on the wedge up in Ferry County, on the Kettle Crest Wedge, urging that to be listed as critical habitat. Fortunately, there was no science to back that up. This was the second attempt to have that happen. We put comments in from my county countering some of those scientific information on that. It was unsuccessful in being listed as Canadian lynx habitat, not because we're against the lynx, but because there hasn't been a lynx in that area for 30 years, except for one critter that's been spotted going through that area. I think when you don't have a critter for 30 years, it's a little hard to say we need to manage the forest for that kind of habitat. But because of an agreement that was made between the state, WDFW, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife back in the 80s, we continue to manage most of the Colville National Forest for Canadian lynx habitat. Now, this isn't the oldie species I'd like to address in this, but this is the focus one. I realize it's a federally listed species. I realize we need to recover this species. I can agree with that. But why in my forest if it's not good habitat? So what we've seen is we've seen logging project after logging project not go through because it's lynx habitat. We've seen areas that are grossly overgrown. We can't put roads in those areas. And the results of that are basically, I'm going to say, the stick pin fire. So to give you some perspective on what this burned is, go from Okanagan to Stevens County, from Highway 20 to the Canadian border. Most of that is now burned. Now, not every tree is gone, not every bit of habitat is gone, but a lot of that is due to lack of management. And the Forest Service and us as commissioners from all three counties, because we were all three there yesterday, involved in this process, and we're all frustrated over this, are just wrapped around the axles, frustrated because we can't do what's right in the management of the area. For species, for the forest, for forest fire, for health and safety reasons. And, you know, it's high time that we spend the time and energy to go back and look at this. If we've made a decision that this isn't critical habitat, let's spend our limited resources on doing the best job we can where habitat actually will make a difference in recovery. And I say that on the links because this has caused us trouble in our county planning. This species we got sued over this species. We ended up having both us and Ferry County having to list this species as habitat and species of local importance because there's polygons on maps that your department has that show this as important habitat when there's no lynx there and they won't stay there. And if for efforts for years, for decades, we've tried to make that habitat there with no success. So I implore you, not just on the lynx, because I realize it's a federal species, but it still needs to be done on the lynx. But a lot of these other species, spend the money and the effort to concentrate on that habitat where you can actually make a difference, and let us manage for the species where we can make a difference. So go back through your list of species and actually start reviewing some of those species that have been listed as endangered and threatened from a state level. Because this agreement that was done is a state issue. It's not a national issue, even though it's a national listing. We can correct it from here. And you commissioners have the authority to direct the department to start that process. let's start spending some money there and let's actually start making a difference, because that would help us all manage a whole lot better. And I got to tell you, as somebody who's had to evacuate on a level 3 evacuation, and I thought I was going to lose my house, it's not something you want to go through. It's not something you want to be a commissioner in. I was in the dispatch the night that we had to tell our firefighters on the Carpenter Road fire that nothing was coming. We had 10 people on that fire. Let us manage the resources to benefit everyone and keep these catastrophic fires from happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I find it really tough when women cry all the time. When men do, boy, that's a whole
other deal. Let me represent first. Sure. George Brady, please. And then always a pleasure.
Oh, okay.
Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the Commission. It's good to be here with you today. And I actually want to add a topic to the list that I was going to discuss, especially with all of the Wolf discussion and the WAG discussion. The first thing I do want to talk about, and it's in relation to the fires, in the 7th District, 4 out of 5 of my counties had active, huge, out-of-control wildfires. So you can imagine the damage and devastation that people are just now starting to understand. And because we're a very agriculture-driven district, you can imagine the impact to the producers, the ranchers, the farmers. And, you know, whether it's their land, whether it's allotments, leased ground. And, you know, having back-to-back, especially in Okanagan County, the Carlton Complex, and then to come back and have all of these other fires, it's just been devastating. And I got a list yesterday of just the initial damage assessments kind of starting to roll in, and it's just unbelievable. But the one thing I wanted to do in this open session today was remind the commission and ask the department to continue to work with our ranchers and farmers. I know that fish and wildlife lands are different purposes, but we have believed for a long time that grazing done in the correct manner can aid in the benefit of species, whether it's diversity or just resiliency of the species that are there. And I would just ask the department and the commission to continue working with these folks. There are going to be many needs for a long time, and the department has bought a lot of land in my district. And so I think it's incumbent upon you to continue to work with the folks that are affected, who may be affected for multiple years. And so certainly we're going to work with the department. I'm not trying to say that they're not working with them. I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to encourage that it's very devastating. It's just 600 at the advent of the fire, 650,000 acres were on fire. And so you can imagine what that does. So I would encourage you folks to work with them. So I'd like to go on to the Wolf issue. There isn't anything that Senator Danzel and my other ranchers and cattlemen haven't said that I don't agree with. But I'm going to take a slightly different tact with this. And I think, Commissioner Wecker, I think actually Senator Danzel and Ted Wishon did provide some good feedback, you know, potential to the WAG to look at. I think with this process, I will tell you that I even expected too much out of the group, which is tough because you've all talked about the desire to want everybody to come together. The department's talked about it. And I think the reality that if that happens, it's going to take a lot longer to come together. My folks can't wait for that process. Now, I actually support the work that Francine's doing. I'm conservative. I don't take it lightly to look at the amount of money that's being spent on that. But I will tell you, my ranchers and Ted Wishon's kids and any other generation of rancher and farmer that comes after them is worth it if it works. And I think it's worth a shot. But the conundrum that we have, and I think it gets to the frustration, and I'm not trying to speak for cattle producers, I'm not trying to speak for Senator Danzel or Ted or anybody, but I think the real frustration is what happens in the meantime. You know, what happens in the meantime? We all want folks to come together and believe that this can work and that wolves and our ranchers can productively coexist and to come up with what that structure looks like. But we have to operate in real time. And I've said when the director and I have had conversations that The wolves don't know that Francine's on vacation. The wolves don't know Francine had issues, you know, initially with the contract. The wolves don't know that they're waiting for this WEG group to come up with what it's going to take to do lethal control, for instance. And so I think the challenge right now is the one that we live every day. And so I'd like to bring up an example of that, and I brought it up. We actually have every other week have a legislative conference call for commissioners and legislators to talk with the department, and I think it's been very helpful. But one of the things I mentioned yesterday, you know, a big issue for us was when Dave Deschiel, you know, almost had his dog killed by a wolf confrontation. So what was the department going to do about that? And they said, well, we're going to wait for one more. And I think the hard part is, so wonder if nothing happens for the remainder of the year, and then we're starting over again, you know, the next year, when we have a history of the Huckleberry North Pack being a depredating pack. Those are the kinds of real things that my ranchers and our community members live with. And so what I would advocate for, if you're going to continue the WAG process, that I think there are decisions that need to be made simultaneously. You can't wait for the WAG to do that. And I know it's difficult, but you've got decisions to be made, and there is a wolf plan to be followed. And the frustration I have is that it's going to continue to repeat over and over again. So if you never have the depredations that never get to the level of lethal removal, you heard from Dave. I heard from Commissioner Deschiel on the conference call yesterday. The reason there aren't the level of depredations potentially is because people have removed their livestock from being hurt and damaged, and Dave's had to move his off, you know. So again, the people who are really being impacted are my ranchers. And so, you know, the department and the commission needs to look at that. And it's not just about killing a wolf. It's about, if you don't take action on a pack that's depredating and has a history of depredations, you never will. And that's just unacceptable. And if you expect my folks to live with wolves on the landscape, then I get that this is a very tough issue. I understand that. And I actually applaud everybody who's on the WAG group. I really do. Because I think they're working really hard. And it is slow. It's very slow. But I think they're really trying. Okay? But what happens in the meantime? And I think that's the crux of the whole thing. And so along with that process of hoping, you got to take action now. And so I've asked, if you weren't on the conference call, but I've asked the department to share information with the director about what they're going to do going forward. Because my folks can't be caught in that continual cycle. If there are problems, they do need to be dealt with. I think you will find a lot more agreement if there is action taken on the packs that are truly a problem. You know, otherwise, my ranchers are the ones that continue to suffer those consequences. And I think you're going to continue to have real, you know, just a lot of conflict where maybe we could get through some of that. And I've talked to WAG members about that just personally, you know, and I know it's a tough decision for some, but it is the reality that we live with. And so I would just advocate, you know, I'm okay with the WAG going forward. I think there have been helpful suggestions. I like Ted's as far as maybe local group, you know, type of thing, or maybe looking at a slightly different structure, and maybe Francine has some suggestions for that. But I think in the meantime, please don't use the Wolf Plan or any amendments, and please don't use the WAG as an excuse for not doing anything, because we can't have that. This issue will never get solved if we don't have a concurrent process, and that's what I'd like to share with you today. Thank you very much.
Representative.
You bet.
Yes. Representative Short,
Between the State House and Senate, there's individuals, there's a great deal of diversity and perspectives on this issue.
Oh, yes, there is.
A great deal. And what's the tone of it right now? I mean, go right now, as far as we're sitting here, and if the department or the commission gets proactive on one way or the other, that we become public enemy number one with many of the legislators trying to figure out a way to make this work so that we can move forward, accomplish what needs to be done based on your statement, and yet keep the House and Senate understanding the predicament we're in. Because I know they get briefed on it, and then there's a few loose cannons, I think, to be fair to say. Your thoughts?
Well, I think personally, over many years, I've done a lot of work reaching across the aisle with members and working, because it is about trying to bring our thoughts together, and we're not going to always agree. You know, Senator Danzel and I had a regional delisting bill, which was our number one priority. And what we've tried to do is allow folks to know that this issue isn't going away, and so part of it has been to continue to keep it in the forefront, right? I think it's a huge education process, and it's one, until you make a decision, you don't know where those folks are going to fall. And so I think it's tough, but we can't use it as a reason for indecision. If I did that, I'd never make a decision on anything. And trust me, you know, there are a lot of times that folks aren't you either make someone happy or you don't make someone happy. And I would advocate to you that if those decisions have to be made, I'm in your corner helping any way I can, because we're visiting with Chris Litton, we're visiting with Hans Dunshi and other folks, and these are folks that, I'll be just candid, we don't share a whole lot together. You know, we represent very different districts, but it's my job to be a part of that process any way that I can, and so I would advocate that if you guys need to make decisions like that, that we're going to continue to work with everyone to try and help you through it. But it's tough. It's not. But the decisions have to be made.
Yes. Agree. You know, thank you much.
Thank you very much. Again, always a pleasure. Good to see you again. And calling up. Oh, yes.
Shelley?
Called up. I'm done.
I guess I want to drop back to the fires. And just like the previous speaker was talking about, putting these vast chunks of ground off use, off limits. And I think this year was very emblematic of the problem that we get when we take all management off of these grounds. Granted, it was a dry year as we've had in a long time. But, I mean, we had firestorms that shouldn't have happened. It's just because all of a sudden we decided that we need to rest all these grounds. We always call what we're doing with the department grounds resting. Everything that you do, one way or the other, is a tool. Whether you log it, you graze it, or if you rest it to death. And you can rest ground to death. And I'm not advocating for clear-cutting everything. I'm not advocating for grazing everything into the ground. But I think that we really need to make certain on these land acquisitions going ahead that we try and keep them working. Because as a firefighter, when we get into these places where there hasn't been a cow, we can't fight fires. When you get those kinds of fuel loads, it's just not safe to get in there and do that. And we take a really bad situation with these fires and make them worse.
There's no question. We've seen areas where lands were managed thin, trees were thinned, grazed, and the fire behavior was different. And so we are actually in communication and will be with DNR and other entities to do the very things that you're talking about on it. You know, it's got to be balanced. It can't be everything, but there's no question that you leave it alone, Mother Nature's going to take care of it, and she did. This year, so.
Well, and that's the thing of it is, you know, they say, well, we don't want to screw up the habitat. What happens when you have these massive burns that burn so terribly hot that, I mean, it just looks like a moonscape?
Yeah, it does.
And granted, that's all part of the deal. Burning is a natural deal, but when we have these unrealistic fires that just blow up and go, and
there's a lot of fuel loading out there.
Yes.
That contributes to that. And I've talked with a lot of firefighters with decades of experience who said they've never seen it like they've seen this year. And, you know, I think you do need to retain management. And even though, again, the lands you acquire, Fish and Wildlife acquires, are different, they still need to be managed. And I think we still need to look at the tools that are available for that. And I would, but I'm also okay if you don't acquire any more in my district. So I just have to put that out there on the record, in all seriousness. But I do think and would encourage where there are opportunities, I think definitely.
And then what it has, the effect it has on the local economies too, is huge. So.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
And for the record, I don't short state representative for the 7th District. So,
Commissioner DeShiel, please. And Mr. Brady, it's all yours.
Hello, I'm George Brady. I'm Vice President of the Washington State Trappers Association. But today I'm also the mayor of Pateras, which is an elected position.
Okay.
So in the next group of discussions, I will be longer than 3 minutes. I met with the director just shortly after he got in office, and one of the issues we brought up with him was CITES tagging by non-department people, because we're having problems getting department people to tag in any kind of reasonable manner, and it was costing, by their own figures, about $150,000 a year for them to do the tagging. We came to the commission. I came to the commission meeting, I think it was in April, suggesting that that we wanted the law changed to allow non-department people to do CITES tagging. And that was passed. And so the current pamphlet, when it comes out, indicates that authorized representatives can tag. The only difficulty with that is, so far, the department hasn't contacted us at all. And so we have, I had told both the commission and the director I would do a training session for people that were going to tag. I've been involved in the CITES process since its inception. I was worked for Fish and Wildlife for 30 years. And there are some things that need that people who are going to tag need to know. But so far, we haven't heard from anyone on it. And so I'd like to know in this three-minute segment what it is the agency is going to do, because we already have hunting seasons underway. We will have a need to tag within a month or two, and I'd like to know what we're going to do about it.
Well, we're not in a position to respond to that question directly.
I understand.
But rest assured that the department will be getting back with you.
Yeah, I'd expected to actually hear from them in the summer.
Right.
I told them that the State Trappers Association convention is in August, that we could do a CITES tagging deal there. Okay. Probably most of the people that would be involved would be there. I didn't hear back from them. Haven't heard anything. And I'm worried that in fact, what's happened is the bureaucracy is dragging the whole thing down, and that even though we have agreed and even though you have agreed to allow us to do it, that nothing is happening. So,
Nate, does that fall in your bailiwick?
It does.
Okay, so.
I don't know the ways, but I'll follow up with Jordan.
Okay, there you go.
We'll talk.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner, you are the bringing up the rear here.
Last.
Yeah.
Last and the least, I'm sure. So generally, I don't use any notes because I think I know what I'm going to talk about, but I had the benefit of listening to everybody else today. But I want to thank you for taking an hour and a half to do a 15-minute session. And welcome the chair and the director and Commissioner Right-Wing Nut to the party. So I just list them as I heard them. I would like to thank our advisory committee for coming in their capacity, not just as being on our commissioner's wildlife committee, but as individuals and for the groups that they represent, and to talk a little bit about the reporting on cougars. Stevens County does have an agreement with the game department to help dispatch them to things. It was one of our problems when we did have cougar problems is it was run through the state patrol. They had 9 to 5 weekends, you know, and weekends off, so you could put a call in and not get any response in a timely matter. Now we have people, I think, that have a real issue with one on their porch or in their apple tree. They can call 911 or just the dispatch center, and we contact the game agents directly from the dispatch center, generally by their cell phone. So that is probably a better deal. I'm too on the edge of the Carpenter Road fire, and Commissioner Right-Wing Nut made me think of it, that on the lands that were game management lands, these happened to be on tribal lands that they bought for game management. And their management had been to put a fence around it and not do anything inside the fence. And I was there when there's 40-foot flame lengths off of old fields. These weren't tree-topping flare-ups. This was just unmanaged weeds and grass, and I didn't see any wildlife run out of it, so I guess either it died there or it never liked to go there in the first place, but that could be a small lesson for some of the management on game lands that might be susceptible to wildfires like that, which this year all of them are. Another subject I listened to was some of the supplemental feeding. What I've found just in our area is generally supplemental feeding a deer and just creates a buffet for cougars. So that practice is actually happening less in our area because the deer come to eat the hay and maybe a few kernels of corn, and pretty soon they're just all you get on your game camera is cougars eating deer. So there's probably a balance in there. One thing I'll mention that our committee members mentioned is we will have a really good harvest level in 117 and 121 this year with the allowance of those spikes and 2 points being able to be hunted. Probably the only limiting factor might be access to the private ground where those deer live. But as you said, those stupid spikes will stand there and look at you and then wonder why they die. But I have seen in our area the youth archery already, because they're also limited by that 4-point restriction last year. They're not this year, but the kids I've seen have taken nice bucks. They're passing up, which is helpful. They know that they can get a nice buck. They're passing up some of those little guys. And so we're getting some good harvest by the youth archery, and I don't know all of those seasons, but when you see a 13-year-old kid get a nice 5-point buck with a bow, yeah, he's probably got some enthusiasm to continue. So in the fire season, we've kind of determined that if you can go, in the last month or so, if you can go 4 hours without having a disaster, then it's a good day. And to put that kind of with the wolf situation a little bit, you know, we've got unknown disasters. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't be. You know, we've currently got in the Summit Valley area where the cougars are a bit thick, there's a guard dog that's missing. There's been a couple set of cattle run through fences. And the conflict resolution specialists know about that. They're probably investigating that to see if it's cat or canine. Generally, cattle going through fences is not cat. So hopefully we'll get, you know, there's a little bit more to that as far as unknown consequences. We've got that North Fork of Chewila Creek that had the depredations this year. The cattle were moved down. The wolves decided Pendere County was a little better place for them. They moved over there. The cattle moved up higher. That's about a 25,000-acre allotment. We won't know the answer till those cattle come out here in the next month to see what the additional losses that could have happened. That's a lot of country to try to find something that stinks for a couple days. Alongside that is another 180 pair DNR lease that had some calves show up without their mothers. This is kind of in synchronization with the fact that Carpenter Ridge pack killed cows instead of calves. So that one will remain to be seen what comes in on that. On going back to the wedge, the same allotment that a couple years ago where the cows came down and, you know, wouldn't go up and the wedge pack was reduced at that time, those cattle are gone from that allotment now. They're headed south. That's a 200 cow permit that has indications that something's going on. They gathered the whole thing 100%, got the cows, turned 20 cows back out to go look for their calves, but we'll find out in a few days whether that happens or not. So we could have, you know, unknown, because the wedge area has not been as hot, because we have these other hot spots going, And we know there's still wolves there. We still have some possible impact on those cattle. As the WAG goes, I was appointed by the four counties to represent them on the WAG. Certainly they're, I think the members of the WAG get along fine. I don't know if Francine's contract was try to make the people get along better. I think that's a fairly easy task because the people get together and don't get in fist fights. So she didn't have to overcome that. I know that one of her, on her resume was that she'd convinced people in Africa to quit lighting elephants on fire. And I told her this might be tougher. But I think I first heard it was 85,000, and that might have been early on before the whole thing. And when another, I just figure another zero in this kind of money is just a rounding error by the state, you know, to be 850,000. But my, and she questioned me on things on what he would propose for the WAG reorganization of it, and my proposal is to reduce it from 9 people to 4 people, where he had agriculture, forestry, hunting, and environmental groups, the 4 people, so that anybody that had an issue they wanted to take forward would be able to pick one of those out. And so because of my good input, it went from 9 to 17. I kind of expected that. As far as my brother staying on the WAG, I don't think he has a ability to do that because he's representing a group that has had a spot on the WAG. I would suggest to him to become a consultant and see how much he can make, giving him advice. I heard also about a book that you ought to read, and so I got one of my own. This is one I found. Somebody found it at a yard sale. It was a good deal. It was printed in 1946 by the predecessor of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I can't remember what they called them at that point, but it's called The Wolves of North America. It goes through all the history worldwide of wolves, their ranges, their habits, and many other things. But it's a good book. You can find it online in the rare book thing. I think anybody that wants to see the unemotional view of wolves could read that book, and I'll loan you one of my 5 copies that I have. As far as the depredation deal, yes, I think it's been said enough that there's always one more depredation. And I contend at a certain point there won't be another depredation. As Dave said, you move your sheep 150 miles, that cures that. His replacement ewes that he kept at home. On one of our conference calls, somebody asked if this was after the dog was beat up. I don't know what kind of shape the wolves were in, but they said that, and you could refer to, he could go back to being called producer number one. That's how they talk about him. So, but they said producer number one has moved his sheep back to a fenced area beside the house, and the game department's comment was that just somebody asked, can we do anything else for non-lethal deterrence? And they said, well, they've moved them back to a pen beside the house, and as far as the game department's concerned, it doesn't get any better than that. My comment to that was, from a producer standpoint, it doesn't get any worse than that. And I don't know if any of you were on that call, but I said the next movie Hal has is there on his porch, and you don't want sheep on your porch, let me clue you. So I don't have anything else. That's more or less taken from all the testimony today and what I've observed in the summer of depredations, the fire that I think is going to cause us some more wolves to come down in lower country that they're already showing that they're doing. It's not going to be a grazing season thing. It's going to be all fall, could be all winter. And that's happened in the other states. But I admire your stamina for taking this 15-minute session to this extreme. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And that brings to a closure public input, and I think I speak for all of my colleagues here that all of you have provided us with food for thought, and it is also very important that, as has been mentioned, we do hear from you. So I encourage you in the future to continue participating in whatever venue that helps us better understand your issues, because we can't do that in a vacuum. So that's why we wanted to, we did extend the time. So the good news is we learned a lot, we heard a lot. The bad news is we're really over